Morning after the night before, the final score from Deepdale, Preston North End 1, Bristol City 0. Dave Fevs predicted it to the T, so later on we'll be asking him for the lottery numbers this evening. Joining me is Dave, Ian and Mark. A few of you have got up to listen live on the Saturday as well, which is really good. Really good of you to do that. I'll be honest, I did watch the game last night. We had a family party, social distancing observed, households and everything like that. So I was watching it, but sort of not in the way that I would normally do. But so rather than me do our normal routine of a summary of the game and then through the match action, I mean, for my part, I thought the first half we were dreadful, utterly dreadful. Can't believe Dean said after the game that he thought we were in it. We looked a shambles of a side. And in fairness, in the second 45 minutes, I thought we maybe did enough to get a point. So that's my take on it. And I guess after today's results, we could drop down three places. Unlikely, because the three teams that could go above us are all playing away. Matches of varying difficulty. But without further ado, I'll come to Ian first. Ian, your thoughts on the 90 minutes and the lineup. So over to you first, and other Mark and Dave, feel free to chat in rather than let either Ian or I chunter on, but we'll start off with Ian just talking about his thoughts on the game.
Yeah, I thought the first half was very, very disappointing. We set up badly against a team that normally plays with the little guy up top, and nobody seemed to know who was going to mark him. Taylor Moore can't play left centre back, so let's get that one. I mean, he might be all right to come on for 10 minutes to close a game out. There is a suggestion that he may be able to play holding midfield if Backinson isn't capable of doing 90 minutes. And he may be able to play right centre back, but at left centre back, he gets himself in trouble. It was a sloppy tackle to give away the penalty, and I think Sinclair did make a meal of it. He may have got a little touch on the ball. There was enough contact to give the referee a decision to make, a la O'Dowda clattering into the guy at Barnsley. And one goal was highly likely to win a game with two out-of-form sides. And with us only have one bloke who you see get the ball in the penalty area and you think he might score, and that's Wells. Yeah. If you pack your side with players that don't create and certainly don't score, none of our forwards score goals apart from Wells or Zizou, and he was suspended. The midfield players don't assist or score. Masengo hasn't got an assist or a goal since he's been at the club. So it's highly unlikely that you're going to get a lot of goals. So second half, yeah, put the team out I thought he should have started with. Played with some width, got the ball forward a little bit quicker, passed it forward instead of sideways and backwards. Didn't do what he did against Millwall. That was play with three holding midfield players in front of a back three, which is a bit odd if you want to get on the front foot. And second half, I thought we were unlucky not to come out with at least a point. Their goalkeeper made a couple of cracking saves, but then again, Bentley made a good one as well.
Yes, so, he did.
That would be my take on the game. And you could almost, you're going to rate the players, you could almost rate them for the first half and then rate them for the second.
That's very true. Dave, your thoughts on that, the lineup and just the overall way the game went?
I rarely have too many problems with the lineup. I think you look at the 11 players that he started with last night, and that 11 is totally capable of going out there and getting a result. But there's lots of things wrong out there at the moment as well, and you know, then it's not helping. But we were pretty poor first half. I think our only real outlet in the game was down the right hand side with Masengo feeding Jack Hunt, and unfortunately I think Hunt put in one really, really good cross, but most of his crosses were poor, and that kind of lost us it. Second half, I don't disagree, we were a lot better, but even in the little bits where we created a bit of pressure, I didn't think we sustained pressure. We let Preston off the hook too easy, either by, you know, giving away a cheap foul, you know, and we know what Preston like, you know, they'll actually foul you and make it look like they've been fouled. And I think we, you know, for me, that was not being very streetwise at all last night. You know, I'd go back to the penalty. Whether it's a penalty or not, I don't care. I think with the form that Preston have got, you've got to be, as soon as that happens, you've just got to be surrounding Scott Sinclair and making the referee think that he's dived.
Yeah. That's lack of streetwise, isn't it? And shithousery, yeah, to give it well known name.
It is actually. Yeah. I think the same with Darnell Fisher. I think Hunt went round the referee. But I'd be all on top of the player as well, and I'd be forcing the referee to do it. And there was a classic example last night, round about, I think it was the hour mark. A ball went out for a throw-in in our right-back spot, and Daniel Johnson had a right go at the referee, saying, that's our throw-in, that's our throw-in. And it was most obviously not. It hadn't gone anywhere near any of our players. 2 minutes later, Naj wins a block tackle down in the left-wing spot, and it's probably a 50-50 in terms of which way the throws go. But he lets the referee make up his mind. If that had been me, I'd be grabbing the ball and taking a throw in, and the ref's probably going to go play on, isn't he? But we don't do that. And that's the kind of weak mental side of us. And I think that shines through. And hence, whenever we built a bit of pressure, we gave away a free kick or we let them break on us and we lost momentum. And it was one of those games where that clock just ticks ever so fast. And you know, we ran out of time then. But it was a better performance second half. Over to you, Mark.
Yeah. Mark, I mean, there was the penalty incident, and then they could have been down to 10 men when I think it was the fullback. I can't remember his name now, but he took out
Darnell
Fisher. I think he was a player that we'd been linked with as well at some stage. But your thoughts on the game?
Wasn't he the player that grabbed someone's testicles the other week and got banned? Was that him?
Yeah, I think he might have been. He's come back from a free game ban. My cousin Ken was telling me that he's only just come back from a free game ban. But yeah, the Darnell Fisher incident. He'd already had two bites of Semenya on the left to get his yellow card, and then he went, his following leg went through a tackle, which is a bookable offence. And if the referee's given a free kick, and Semenyo's, he was rolling around on the floor. He was in pain, probably exaggerated it a little bit. That's got to be a sending off. The referee bottled it. He certainly bottled it. The penalty incident, Sinclair's clever. What he does is he takes the ball across Taylor Moore and invites the challenge. And Moore falls for hit, line and sinker. All he has to do is stand up. He's got to turn Taylor Moore. He doesn't have to make the challenge. Just stand up and try and block the shot. So, but Dave's absolutely right. You know, we're very soft. What I thought I saw in the first quarter of an hour was City were looking a bit more streetwise. The first quarter of an hour again, we were sort of bumping players. We were pressing. There was a little bit of that. And we looked like we were going to put ourselves about. But as soon as that went, I think Sinclair burst into the box and had his first shot in 17 minutes. Then City went really deep. The midfield got isolated. Dean Holden said we were passive in the final third. We weren't. We were scared. There were no midfielders getting ahead of the ball. We relied on Hunt's crosses, and that was it. We were all waiting for the half-time whistle, and then we were better in the second half. But still, we don't get the midfield players breaking in front of the ahead of the ball, and the one player who's got the best finishing in the team didn't have any shots on goal. We didn't create anything for Wales, and that's where he fell down. In fact, we didn't create anything really for Martin either. And the one person you want with plenty of balls going into the box managed to get himself banned. Those players that we had on the bench last night, all the youngsters were really there as bench warmers, because I don't think Dean trusted them to go on. He didn't think they were going to do anything. So it's a sad indictment that we were relying on the second half to come back. Yes, we looked really good, and Earl and Fisher were really threatened by Semenyo and O'Dowda on each wing, and I think they've got if they both play, they both got to play out wide. But can you play with, you can't just play with natural wingers now. There's no such thing. Players have got to work. Do they play in a 4-3-3 up top with Wells, or do they play in a 4-4-1-1 or a 4-4-2?
These are the decisions. These are the decisions, the structure of the side that Dean has to make. I mean, if we look at individuals, Ian, I'll come to you. I mean, Taylor Moore, he seems to have regressed a lot in recent weeks. Masengo, we've talked numerous times that we've sort of drummed any natural talent, it appears, out of him. He was taken off. Backinson looked weak, although he did one exquisite pass which cut the defence late in the second half. There's a whole raft of things going wrong, Ian, that are, yes, we've got the players out injured, but this mentality, this confidence and stuff like that, what's the root cause of it? And I'll ask you the same question, Dave, but Ian first.
Well, if let's take a look at the players there. You've got guess where Masengo plays for France? And
attacking central midfield. Yeah,
he's an attacking midfielder.
Yeah.
Now, for us, he's never scored a goal or got an assist, and you think he would have got one just by accident.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with him? We've coached, when I first saw him, he came on as a sub against QPR. And by the way, I think he was our best midfield player in the first half last night. Now, I know that's a low bar.
I just said the same, Ian, actually, on text. So.
Yeah,
I thought he was good last night.
Yeah, and the manager doesn't like him. And they've obviously said to him, look, in order for you to succeed in English football, we need to turn you into Robocop. So you need to get down here on the weights, put on about 2 stone of muscle, and then you'll be fine. The only problem is that's taken away any built-in inherent ability in it, because I first saw him,
and agility, and probably too.
Yeah. And agility.
Because he really, sorry to interrupt you, Ian. I mean, I really thought this season, he's bulked up, but he's so puffy in the face compared to what he used to look like. It's almost like he's on bloody steroids to give him this physicality. Yeah,
Do you remember me saying back when we first started these podcasts that I likened it to, I think when we saw him put that little bit of bulk in on before the Blackburn game, I likened it to Fernando Torres, in that Torres was a real kind of like skinny, you know, no real definition about him when he first went to Liverpool. But his body wouldn't cope with playing 38 league games and European games all season. So they have to build him up, because otherwise, you know, you get injuries and knocks. And he lost, I think, at that little bit of, you know, that bit of something extra, that little bit of sharpness as a result. And I remember saying the same about Masengo. And I thought that was the case when I saw him play a little bit this season. Last night, I thought he actually looked really good. Or not really good, probably a bit strong, but up against everyone else, he was the pick for me in the first half. You know, there was one bit where he took a ball on his chest in the centre circle, and he volleyed a pass out to Hunt with his left foot. And you think, no one else in our team's got that ability about
him. There's a footballer in there.
And there was one bit, he knocked a first-time ball into O'Dowda, and O'Dowda runs on from 30 yards out. I'm thinking, just hit the bloody thing. And then he's tried to play a little 1-2 with Martin. I think, just hit it, you know. And that was some of the little flashes of Masengo last night. I'm thinking, that's what we saw, as you say, Ian, QPR last year, Swansea last year, when he looked really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
he you were saying, Ian, you're talking about Masengo playing out of position for us.
He was making late runs into the box, and he had a nice touch. And when he tackled people, he actually got the ball when he was lighter. Yeah. Team of coaches, our coterie of coaches, has coached that out of him.
Yeah.
And if you look at the players in our side, and I made this point a few weeks ago, do you think we could get 4.5 million from Masengo now? Do you think we could get, what was it, the combined costs of Palmer, Callas, and De Silva? Do you actually think we could get somewhere around, what was we paid for them? About 14 million for the three?
Well, COVID notwithstanding, but probably not in reality.
COVID didn't stop the Premier League spending 1.2 billion. So I'm not.
Might have been me just messing about there.
I take your point about COVID, but you know, the Premier League spent $1.2 billion on players. And
but don't forget, they've got the TV money in, because all through the summer I was thinking, how are these guys, yeah, how are they doing it? You know, how are they spending all this money? And then you think, well, they're coming through the turnstiles, not important to them. They don't care.
Ian, can we just talk about kind of transfer fees and maybe Mark Ashley a little bit later? And yeah. So I think there's a good link up with what you're saying there.
If we're talking about Masengo, at first glance, a layperson would say he doesn't look physically capable of the demands of the Championship, and he's scared to get beyond the ball. And we know there's a good player in there. If he supposedly plays an attacking midfield player, and you think with Keith Downing and Paul Simpson, there'd be some encouragement to drag defenders out of position. But Josh Earl of Preston looked so comfortable in the first half, because the only player that was onto him was Hunt, and he was just skying balls into the penalty area that were just being headed back by Huntington and Davis. They wouldn't have had an easier time all season.
No. Well, the problem you get is when you play a lot of high balls to small strikers. Now, this big Chris Martin thing makes me fall about laughing. He's 5'10". Yeah, Naki Wells is shorter than I am. He's 5'6".
Yeah.
And we blast a ball above his head. And they're neither of them quick. So it's no good playing the ball down the channel and saying, right, go on, give them a race, because they'll lose. So what you need is the creativity in midfield to get the ball in and to put in head-high crosses or drill them in low.
Yeah.
I just found that absolutely frustrating last night. We know that Wells can score a lot of goals if he gets the chances.
Yeah.
But I don't see... Okay, they made the right changes at halftime, but why did they set up wrong in the first place? And in terms of getting the team to the next level and a breath of fresh air, I'm sorry, but injuries aside, it ain't happening.
No,
it's just not happening, and I'm not feeling it, and I'm not getting it at the moment. And I don't think they're capable of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, Mark, somebody made the point on OTIB last night or somewhere about coaching. I'll call it top level players, under 17 level, which is what Dowling and Simpson have done. That is very different environment to the rigors of Championship football. And I look at both of those players that are assisting Holden, and I don't see somebody that can be helping on a rookie manager in a meaningful way. It's not like, we all remember going back a few years, was it that John Ward, he wasn't, he, you know, he admitted he needed help, or was it Tinian? Who was the one who wanted Ray?
John Ward.
Wanted Ray Harford, the late Ray Harford.
Yeah, he wanted Ray Harford. I think he was at Oxford at that time, and the club said no. And of course, they brought in Lennartson over his head, and he resigned after a game on the TV against Bolton Wanderers, didn't he? You think, in my opinion, with those younger players, they should play without fear. It's in a completely different environment under 23 level or under 17, and there's probably a lot more free flowing football. But unfortunately, and I think it's an advantage playing in stadiums without crowds. Those players, you know, without the criticisms of fans, should be able to show a bit more courage when they're on the pitch, because they're capable of that. And that's what worries me. We are capable of playing better football, but there's some sort of mental block. You can't tell me that the player, you know, the manager doesn't want him to do that, and he just says, I want you to give the ball to Jack Hunt and just kick it in the area as high as you can, and we'll chase the ball, because Naki Wells to say, well, in that case, I'm off in January.
Yeah,
there's no point. So we are better than that. I mean, in the first half as well, of course, and to some extent in the second half, Adam Nash was just completely anonymous, and he's got a lot of capability. If you saw him against QPR, he's a box to box player, maybe without the physical attributes of somebody like Josh Brownhill, but he's more than capable of getting on the end of balls and making things happen.
Yeah.
And not enough. We're just not making those things happen against teams that want to sit in. And when we play Wickham on Boxing Day, they will sit in. and they will frustrate because that's what teams do. You've got to find a way of beating it.
Yeah, Dave,
just not doing that.
Yeah, Dave, you did your match ratings, and I know you're not a great fan of Nash, and I've sung his praises. And
I don't mind Nash, actually.
You gave him a four last night, and
I did. Yeah, yeah.
You give Chris Martin a four, and you said Elchingham, you gave him a naught as a referee, and Keith Stroud is like Pierluigi Collina.
I hate Jeff Elchingham. I think he's the worst. I think he's the worst referee out there. He is someone who has. I don't think he's ever played a game of football in his life. He's probably never had a kick about in the playground because no one ever picked him, I suspect. But he just does not know what a football match is about. And therefore, he makes lots of wrong decisions and he gets swayed by people. And, today it was swayed by players. Often he'll be swayed by crowds. And, I don't rate him. You've come to me in the past, and I'm normally the kind of, I say balanced one. I'm not sure that's necessarily right, but I probably see some more positives than a lot of, people on OTIP do. But I've never given so many 4 and 5 marks to players in my life. And I guess the email I sent you last night and Ian and Mark was, our first half performance is so inept. How does anyone come out of that with a 6 out of 10 if they were a 2 out of 10 in the first half or a 3 out of 10 in the first half? They can't make up that much, can they? And hence, my scores were pretty low last night. But, I think I said at Rotherham, one of the our problem is we're too deep. Our defensive line's too deep. And last night it was, you go back and watch that game again and you watch Huntington or Davis at the back. And if they're clearing a ball, you wait how long it takes for the camera to pan to where our back line is. In essence, if that camera's covering 40 yards of the pitch, it should be a quick pan and you should see our defensive line. I think years ago, Gary Birtle said the optimum distance between your front and back line is 35 yards. Well, at times last night and a lot of times last night, we were 50 to 60 yards apart. And so, Ian, you go back to your point about, hitting long balls to Martin and Wells. Well, you can't play a short pass along the ground because it's impossible to knock a 50, 60-yard ball along the deck with any pace to reach someone. And to me, that I'm not saying that's the only problem with the way we're playing, but I don't think it matters what formation, what setup you do if your back line's 50 or 60 yards away from your front line. And I think all you do is you basically set your midfield up to fail because they've got too much ground to cover. Someone who's on Masengo's case all the time was posting last night and saying, oh, Masengo runs around like headless chicken. I'm thinking, he's got to run around like headless chicken because he's got 40 yards to close down a player because we're just not compact. And I did some stuff in the week as well where I looked at our distances front to back from, I think it was, is it Sheffield Wednesday? Yeah, Sheffield Wednesday was the home game where we were a bit mixed, weren't we? We played average-ish first half, and then second half, we had a really good second half.
Yes,
and
our
distances there were about 35 to 40 yards front to back. Rotherham, we were 50 yards. And those 10 to 15 yards make a huge difference. It allows the opposition to get on the ball with a bit of time.
So is this coaching again? Is this coaching again, Dave? Because I understand the technical aspects of the game far more than I do. Yeah, I admit to that. But how you said it, it's almost saying every week it's blame the midfield. But then is it, is the back line accountable as well then?
I think last night, especially, for half an hour I was moaning that Callas must be suffering from his dead leg because he's so deep. And then after about 35 minutes, he sprinted for a ball. And I'm thinking, he must be fine. So why is he setting his line so deep?
Did you notice as well, Dave, when the midfield lost the ball, from our few attacks, when we tried to get in our final third, there was so much space for Barkays and then Sinclair to exploit because of that deep line. Then they could make those runs. And, of course, everybody pushed up. In the second half, when we changed it, we were much more compact. and it completely changed. Sinclair, you already saw Sinclair in the second half because the lines were much more compact. Exactly what you said.
It was better.
I thought 2-3-1 worked very well for them.
What you had in that midfield last night was three players who can't pass the ball that well. I mean, they can pass it 20 yards, tops, but they're never going to ping one.
Shouldn't need to, though, Ian.
They're not. Well, if you do what you say, play a much higher line, I don't think many teams will, certainly not Wickham, would outpace us. Any of our defenders from the halfway line.
No.
So you've got to get
I noticed to dominate.
But hang on, Mark. Hang on. The problem that you've got in the fact that there's lots of things happen with that. When we play a long ball and Chris Martin flicks it on, there's no one there. Him and Wells, for two blokes that have been playing together, have got no understanding of each other whatsoever. It's the same with Pham. When he gets up and he does happen to win the header and flick it on, no one's gone beyond him, not the other strikers. No one.
No.
What's the point? So he's either got to jump it 3 feet in the air and chest it and bring it down. Good luck with that. And I think if we'd have had Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez up front last night, we wouldn't have scored.
I agree.
And it's no good putting players in a team and asking them to do things they can't do. And that's where we've left ourselves. We've sold and loaned out three midfield players, four if you include Smith, who we released, and we're stuck with the ones that we've got in there. And I cannot honestly see the point of doing that, certainly all of them, even if when they knew that Walsh and Williams weren't going to make it. Mm. And if they didn't know they weren't going to make it, you have to ask the question, well, why didn't they know?
Yeah, you go back to that high line, Ian, and I was having a bit of a debate with Spudsky on the forum this morning, and it's funny, yesterday I posted something about what my kind of basic footballing philosophy was, and it's all built around pace, it's built around high lines, and it's built about if you can't pass the ball along the deck into your front players, you've got to spin them in behind. And you know, it's a pretty basic football philosophy, but I think what you're saying there about high line is right. You either do that, or if your defence has got sucked too deep, your forwards have got to come deep as well. And in some respects, if you do that, you bring their back line with you, so you condense the space. And therefore, you then get your options back out round in the channels then as well. I used an analogy of a rubber band on the other night. And to me, that was exactly what it was. Our rubber band was stretched to breaking point last night. And what we needed to do was condense that whole pitch and give Preston less room to play, and therefore you can actually press. And that was the feature of Johnson's 17, 18, 3 or 4 months of great football, was actually we ended up playing like a 4-6-0 or a 4-4-2-0 because our two strikers, Patterson and Reid, dropped into midfield. They sucked the defenders with them, and therefore our press only needed to run 20 yards.
Yeah.
It's far better than 40 yards. Now, I'm no coach either, but there are some basics out there that unfortunately become muddled over the last 6-8 games, I think, which I didn't see at all in those opening 6-8 games. And there's a bit of a middling period as well. I see a totally different team to what I saw at the side I saw at the start of the season, which I was quite enthused about. I'm quite worried at the moment.
You're worried in what sense? They're worried that, you know, we could go through January with this bad run continuing. Mm. I mean, the good thing is we've got like now, well, since they played, I mean, they've got a complete week. They've almost got a normal week now leading up to Boxing Day.
Well, 8 days,
and
aren't they?
You think,
8 days.
And you think, yeah.
Yeah, Mark's right, 8 days.
You know, 8 days a week, yeah, we could do with that. Because we have been playing relentlessly. There's no doubt about that.
There's mitigating circumstances, Dave, absolutely. But there's some fundamentals wrong at the moment, in my opinion. And if you don't get those fundamentals wrong, you know, that wasn't a bad 11 they put out last night. It wasn't our first choice 11.
No.
But it wasn't a bad 11 either.
But that's what we've been saying, though, about the previous week when people say, oh, it's a weak bench. I mean, it was weak last night. But, you know, there's a lot of players. So when you say there's something wrong, right, and okay, we got a week now to collect our thoughts and what have you, and we've got Wickham. Now everybody's thinking, oh, that's fine, we'll put that right against them. Right? You know, what if you were Dean Holden, I'll come to each of you individually on this. What would you not if you were Dean Holden, Dave, Dean Holden, what should he be doing this week on the training field or in the tactics room with his assistants? What would you be saying? And if you were the players, right, because there's some experienced players out there, what would you be saying? Because it's a two-way conversation sometimes if it's being run properly. What would you be saying to the coaches? So you first, Dave.
I think first thing I'd be doing is using all of my man management skills to try and build some confidence. But then that's kind of like off the training ground or, you know, in the dressing room, in the change rooms. On the training ground, define your system that you are going to play for the rest of the season and don't change. And if that means that some players don't get in, I don't know, we haven't got much choice at the moment, then so be it. But you need to play a single way and people need to get used to it. And that's what I'm doing. From a player's point of view, I think if I was Masengo, I'd be saying, why did I get taken off at halftime, boss? Because I think that was a poor decision. Okay, in height, you could say, well, we played better second half, but Naj still wasn't exactly storming through the midfield, was he? I think the rest of them, there might even be that kind of cozy club because we got so many injuries. You know you're guaranteed to be on the bench. You know you know 75% of our fit players are going to start every week, and maybe that creates a bit of coziness. I don't think
the other thing is we can say we play with one system, but at the moment our most threatening players from the creative point of view are probably Semenyo and O'Dowda, and you can't play them in a 3-5-2. You certainly can't play. I don't think you can play O'Dowda in a middle three because he's completely wasted. And I think the difference at the start of the season is I think Dean wanted to play 3-5-2 with Walsh and Williams. When he lost them, he had a little bit of a different system with Patterson and Vyman moving. Their pace was able to move defenders out of position. They were very lively, and that created chances that accumulated 10 goals in the first five games. 10 goals in the first five and 10 in the next 15. That's been the difference.
That's poor, isn't it? Yeah. So what would you be doing then, Mark? What would you do? And if you were a player, I mean, I think Dave just said about Masengo saying, why you keep taking me off? Give me a run. I felt I was getting my mojo back. If you were a player, Mark, what would you be saying to the gaffer in terms of the style?
I think the player's got to play with more confidence. There's confidence lacking there. We don't need to be on the back foot all through the first half. Well, despite the first quarter an hour, like we were against Preston, that was mainly because we weren't giving them any questions to answer in terms of attacking. You know, midfield players have to get beyond their fullbacks. If we're playing with two wide men, the fullbacks have got to move up the pitch and exchange passes with the left and right midfield to be able to put the fullback under pressure. Likewise, a midfield two or three or whatever you play, have got to against a defence that are sitting in. They've got to try and run beyond the centre backs. So be a bit braver on the ball. Those players are capable of playing better. And I think a lot of it is lost in the head. Where they can't compete physically, they can play better technically. I think what we lack in the midfield is the ability to tackle. We're certainly very physically capable in the centre of the pitch, and we're not playing great football to be able to play a possession game. So you're going to have to find something in between the two in transition where you get the ball perhaps behind the fullbacks and then bring the team up. I don't know.
So are our coaches...
Go on, Ian. Have your say on this.
Well, I wouldn't be as wordy. Are our coaches good enough to deliver the breath of fresh air and take us to the next level?
And no.
On everything I'm seeing, no. So I don't think they'll be able to do many of the things you've suggested. In January, if all the players that are said to be coming back in January And touch that wood. Would be Patterson, Mawson, Walsh, Williams, and Baker. That's five. That would make it a completely different side, and you could play 3-5-2, and you could play getting your fullbacks up a bit higher. We're not going to see Vyman or De Silva this season.
No.
Sessegnon's probably we won't see Brunt again until March. And by the way, the guy that was going to be their man of the match until he went off, Gallagher, is a year older than Chris Brunt.
Yeah.
So it's not a question of the player's age. Now, Chris Brunt is now out until March. So,
well, he has got the same way as Gary O'Neill, hasn't he? Yeah, because...
Well, the problem with it, Dave, is that you've got to look at recruitment. Are we recruiting the right people? Are we doing enough background checks? Or are we having our leg lifted in a transfer market like we did with Engvall? I think it goes a lot deeper than, well, we're not playing very well. But I think you could do better. What would I do against Wickham with what's available? I think I'd probably start with the team that finished against Preston, play a higher line. But if something wasn't I wouldn't. I'd start with Zizou up front, because I think the reason he got sent off is because he didn't start the game against Millwall. Yeah. And he came on. He was so pent up and frustrated. The poor guy's eyes were bulging out of his head.
Yeah.
So get him in the team. Either that, or even if that means you get to January and somebody comes in with a cheeky offer and you take it, and then you reinvest that money in another striker, somebody to score goals. If it's not working, then, and certainly in the FA Cup game coming up, I would play the likes of Bell. I'd certainly recall Palmer and Campering. That gives you options at left wing back, left back, whatever you want to do. Yeah. And I watched him for Portsmouth last night, and he had a decent game. And then at least you can say, well, okay, I will play with two more holding style midfield players, but I'll put Palmer in, play him as a 10, give him a free role, and hopefully he can work a bit of magic and set something up for Wells or Zizou. Yeah. Or whatever. You can't go on.
You'd never play Palmer and O'Dowda in the same side, though, would you? I don't. I would.
Well, if you played 4-5-1 and just had Pham up front, you could actually do that. And that's what Brentford did last season. They played two very attacking wide players who would still tuck in and do some work, but they also played an attacking midfield player, somebody like Canos, who we were linked with. So you can do it, but you have two in midfield holding, and particularly if you've got Walsh and Williams back, then that would then give Palmer a bit more license to push on. And so when you're attacking, it's 4-3-3, and you push the midfield forward. Once again, playing the high line that Dave talked about, because we're just too easy to play against. And I don't, but like I say, I've got no confidence in the coaches in solving the problem, because I don't think you solve a problem with the thinking that created it. And Dean Holden was part of the thinking that created the way we played the last four seasons. And the last two seasons, what I would ask you all as a question is, what's different now from the last two seasons under Lee?
All I would say, absolutely nothing, because it's becoming a chore to watch. When you've been doing something for 50 odd years, you do it. I'll come on to something, an interaction with the club
yesterday. I'll be honest with you, Dave. You're talking about ticket money. If you gave me £100, I wouldn't go to the Wickham game. I'd rather just.
If they gave you, if somebody gave you,
if they gave
you, I'd be breaking the law if I went.
if it's free, go on. The £100 deal where you get a meal and something else.
Well, I'll bring up, I mean, you guys heard it before we went into this, right? I've been a Lansdowne Club member. I did a 10-year deal years ago. Then this is year five of a 5-year deal. So Mel and I, we both go, and it costs us $2,500. Now, I knew when that 5-year deal ran out, that was probably going to go up to $3,000, and we were seriously considering not doing it, because that's a lot of money, right? I got a call from the club yesterday saying, doing corporate hospitality for the Wigan game, the Wickham game. It's £100 plus VAT. They always say plus VAT, so it doesn't look so bad. That's 120 quid. For the two of us to go to that game, it was 240. Now, they've only got 200 corporate hospitality places there on Boxing Day, and they will sell out at that price because there's some people who are a fool with their money and some people, unlike you, Ian, and unlike me, will still go regardless. So I said to them, would it not be fair, would it not be fairer if they took 1/23rd of the 500 quid they're holding over from last season, which would take the 120 quid down to 65. Still 130 for the two of us, but it's sat in their bank account, so it's gone as far as I'm concerned. No, they wouldn't do that. It was like, it's 100 quid, take it or leave it. And you are getting table service, I was told. Yeah, well, and what about a gesture of goodwill to people that have put 5 years commitment to go into the club? Then I said, can I get a ticket only option? No, you can't. You're not a season ticket holder, so you'll have to take your chance with the rest. And I said, I'll have my money back. And in fact, they'd offered me the money back. And if they'd have said I could have a ticket only, I'd have left the money there. So there's four others in our group. So they are giving me back 1,500 quid, of which 500 is mine and Mel's, 1,500 quid next week. And I feel I copied Mark Kelly on the email. And it's not the girl who I was interacting with. It's not her, right? But 120 quid to watch it when I can sit at home with a mince pie on Boxing Day, yeah? And, put up with whoever's doing the assistant commentary. But I think that's appalling. And it'll be interesting. I mean, Dave, are you going on Wicked? No, what have they decided? What's happened? Oh, you're tier three, aren't you? You're
tier three, but yeah, they've from a disabled section point of view, they have 10 seats and 10 carers out of the 2,000. So, which I don't know what the proportions are today, but is that I guess they've done it in pro rata to the split of wheelchair supporters to able-bodied supporters. So,
but they're parting with 1,500 quid, that no flexibility, no thank you for your loyalty. I mean, I could afford to go. I could afford to spend the money.
It's not the point, is it?
No. I think, I'll be honest, look, we were shat upon. I know you want to talk about the Man United game, Mark, at some point, which seems a distant memory now. But we were shat upon with tickets on that. And I know last season, if we'd have got up, we'd have got up via the playoffs last season, the final year of this deal, right, that we were on, they wouldn't have wanted us or any of us, probably about 60 people on a five-year deal, they wouldn't wanted us in that corporate lounge. And I said to Mark Kelly, I said, Mark, if we did get up, this was before obviously we came back and Lee got his four games, I said, if I was in your situation, I'd be buying me out because you're getting about 100 quid a game from me, whereas if we're in the Premier League, right, they could sell what I've got for 300 quid a game for most of those matches. Yeah. Now, here we are now, right? I had 500 quid carried over, 1,500 if you include the other people in my group. Yeah. I'm having it all back. Just bear with me one second.
It's not Mark Kelly.
No, it's not. Yeah. I'm having it back. I'm having the money back, right? And as I said, it's with a heavy heart that I'm having it back. Yeah, because I just don't think it's right. And if they'd have said the ticket, I'd have left it all there. Because I don't need the money back. Yeah. But I just feel once again, Bristol Sport, this corporate entity, they're not really interested in what the fans think. But this season, because we ain't gonna go up, famous last words. Yeah, next season when a lot of people, what's next season gonna look like? And when they're trying to sell season tickets and people have got the option, a lot of people have gone away from their routines like I have for 50 years, right? People are going to think twice about buying a season ticket, yeah? And they'll be begging us. Well, they won't. They're too dumb to even...
Well, they might. There's people who won't be in a financial position to purchase season tickets, David.
A lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people just won't be able to do it. I mean, I'm sure we all worry about our jobs.
I made the decision this year, even though I bought a season ticket, not to go. And I contacted the club and said I'd like my money back. And then we had all the COVID stuff. So I started getting my money back anyway. That was to do with the fiasco over the appointment of Dean Holden. It wasn't because we appointed Dean Holden. Had we done that after Lee had been gone for a week, I wouldn't have had a problem. But we had to have all the big build up about the project and how wonderful it was, and how we wanted to go to the next level, and how we were doing this global search, and we'd had applications from all over the world. And exactly the same thing happened when we appointed Lee Johnson. We were looking at Brendan Rodgers, Nigel Pearson actually expressed an interest.
Steve Gerrard. You know, they didn't put the mockers on that.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dean Lee Johnson.
Yeah, and it's time.
And now I was so hacked off with that process. I said, right, that's it. I won't bother to go. Just give me my money back. Abroad, I can watch it on Robin's TV. As it's turned out, I've watched games on Robin's TV. I've also watched games on Sky Red Button and on Sky Main Match. So I'm actually quids in.
Yeah.
But next season, unless something changes radically for the better, and that could be the 6 or 7 injured players coming back, but unless it changes radically for the better in terms of not just because the last 3 games... We've played reasonably well for 45 minutes. That was last night. The other games, we were pitiful throughout. Absolutely pitiful. Mm-hmm. And what bothered me last night in the first half wasn't that the players weren't trying. It was that a lot of them were. And they were still terrible. And I don't want to watch that. That level of performance. We were terrible at home against Birmingham, Middlesbrough, Millwall. We were abysmal at Rotherham, and we were abysmal first half last night. Now, that isn't a blip. That's a pattern.
Yeah.
And I'm just not seeing progress and improvement, even when I take into account, and I have taken into account, the terrible injury problems that we've got. I think they are worse than an awful lot of clubs. I know clubs have got them, but I mean, not arguably 7 blokes that would be in the first team.
Yeah.
Other clubs aren't suffering from long.
Dave, one of the points, sorry, go on, Dave.
Other clubs aren't suffering long-term injuries like us. You know, there was the, you know, comparison to Norwich a couple of weeks ago, but they had, you know, Pukki and Krul and, who's the other guy, Vrančić, and people like that. They had them out for 2 games maximum. You know, we've got them out for a long time. And I think you're right, Ian. You know, I think we all are, you know, anyone who's half sensible about this understands there are some mitigating factors.
Yeah.
But even with those mitigating factors, what we're seeing is not good enough. It's not like we've got 5 kids out there that, you know, and that's why we're losing, not putting in a performance, and they're trying their best. These are pretty much established players to you know, they're players that have played when we were doing well at the start of the season.
Yeah,
you're right. That's the thing. If we were putting out the kids and losing, then and playing with a little bit of effort, then happy days. Yeah,
it's not paying.
Somebody on here who's got the name ending 75SY. I think I know it might be, because he said if you don't want to spend the money, don't go. You do bang on a bit, and if it is. If you're listening and your initials are TC, just do one, you complete whatever. And he's also said, which it means why I think it might be this person, Steve Gerrard, never had a clue about any interest. As for Brendan Rodgers, seriously, what planet are you on? This is hilarious. Brendan Rodgers was back in about 2016, not the most recent one, but there we go. Oh, look, he's come on. Come on, lads, this is hard work. 15 minutes I've been listening. It's like 4 old blokes suffering depression. What about saying something positive and upbeat? Well, why not enter the live studio then? Yeah, come in. Offer us something positive and upbeat. Yeah, are you on happy pills?
The problem we got is everything about City, and this has been going on for decades now, we oversell and underdeliver greatly, both corporately and on the pitch. And, you know, people aren't going to be taken for mugs. I mean, with the Dean Holden situation, he's almost like Steve McClaren when Louis-Philippe Scolari, the FA went chasing him for months before he pulled out and McLaren was appointed. And they said he was our first choice. Dean wasn't our first choice. Dean was third, fourth. It's not Dean's fault. It's the club. It's a laughable attempt at trying to convince everybody.
They don't want it. Easy touch. Exactly. Look, he's not. I mean, Paul Cook, by all accounts, isn't a very nice bloke, right? But he's got a half decent record, albeit a lower level of football. Yeah, but he's not got a bad record down there. And they want the easy touch. Dave, earlier on in one of the texts, you said about the debate of Mark Ashton's role in all of this, because people are on OTIB, fingers start to point in that direction, and you say, let's see how he deals in an inflationary market with the transfer window opening in about 10 days' time. Yeah. Please expand on that.
Yeah, I guess it's a non-inflationary market is the point. If I typed it wrong. I think over the past few years, you know, let's not worry about, you know, if Mark Ashton's smarmy or anything like that. I think he's a bloody good football administrator. Okay, I'm not gonna dispute that. And he's got a lot of kudos for selling players at good prices. And I think my argument, same argument was kind of with Lee Johnson. It's not difficult to turn in transfer profit in an inflationary market. And when we first started doing these podcasts months ago, I said, him appointing Dean Holden, I'm quite behind Dean Holden, and I still am. I think he's under pressure. I said, this appointment will make or break Mark Ashton. And that's really because of two things. One, because John Lansdowne is never going to be the fool guy if it goes wrong. It's always going to be Mark Ashton and obviously Dean Holden himself if it goes wrong. And the other thing is we're in COVID times and Mark Ashton can't sidle up to Steve Lansdowne and say, oh, well, it's all the manager's fault. Look how much money I've earned. Because, it's interesting, we haven't had the account through. The last couple of years, they've been produced in October and November. I did look back a little bit further and tip it.
They are usually out the end of November.
But actually, in previous years, they've been January and February on occasion. So I don't think it's anything necessarily to worry about. But Mark Ashton hasn't got a 10 million, a 15 million, a 20 million player to sell this year. So his balanced scorecard, if he was
there's no income, is it?
And you can't blame him for that, but the whole sustainability is buy cheap, sell dear, and he can't sell dear. And I'm not saying that's his fault, but suddenly his role probably has been easier to justify in an inflationary market than a non-inflationary market. And this really goes back to Ian's point at the start in terms of some of those player values. The only player I think we could possibly sell for more than a couple of million is Dan Bentley. And that's quite a sad indictment when we've paid 7 million for Callas. We've paid millions for other players as well. I don't think we have many sale assets.
We might get lucky. If Viner carries on the way he's playing and keeps a place in the team,
but,
and he wasn't
not
too
at this
bad
point, Dave, he'd not, be worth. Yeah, someone was saying 10 million the other
day. Yeah, well, if he can't play against journeyman players like Michael Smith. I mean, Zhao of Reading, okay. But if he gets beasted by players like Michael Smith, who's just been around the lower leagues, has never really made it in the Championship, then he's got a problem. If he can't mark tighter in the penalty box, can he? He's never going to do it.
Well, that's a physical size thing. And what you do, you play a much higher line and you don't let people, you don't give away stupid free kicks and you don't let people ping balls all day in the box. That's what you don't do, because Michael Smith can win as many headers as he wants on the halfway line. Just drop off, let him flick it on and pick up the flick.
Well, it was a second goal he got last week. That was on the ground, wasn't it? The cross from Ola Sunday when he just dived in and beat Viner.
Mark, it's a cross into the penalty area and he gets in what Lee Johnson loves to call POMO. Position of maximum opportunity, maximum, and he turns it in. Because Zach Viner, if you're in a fight against a bloke that size, look at the bloke that Cardiff got, who I said we should have signed.
Kiefer Moore,
right? You ain't going to get in a fight with him, right? He's too big. He's too hard. He's going to knock you over if you're Zach Viner or Taylor Moore. And I think Thomas Callas did have a good game against him. I'll give him that. But he should have still scored goals against us. That was a lucky win. So you decide, at least the respect that I've got for Rotherham is at least they decided how they wanted to play.
Yeah.
Right. And they played and they inflicted their game on us, and we never had a bottle to fight back against it and impose our game on them. And that concerns me. That's about heart, spirit, character. Didn't see any of it against Rotherham. No. Saw very little against Millwall and only saw a bit of fight in the second half last night. That's the worrying thing. It's a run of games. It's not a one.
No. So are we close to the edge in terms of the form could go not into the abyss, but we're on the thin end of the wedge in terms of losing a lot of games in a row. I mean, Wickham only lose games narrowly. They've got two wins all season. A lot of their games are very close. I'm looking at their form, draws coupled with
we need a performance. Well, we need a performance against Wickham, of that there is no doubt. We need a performance.
And there'll be fans in the stadium watching it.
If it's a 0-0, and there will be, but they won't be getting any criticism because everybody will be just happy just to be back in the ground, right? But we need a performance.
Should
win. Yeah. Right? For five, well, it only takes a second to score a goal, doesn't it, right? But if we were to Perisic have a dodgy draw at home to Wickham, like 0-0 or something like that, went to Luton, and we've been to Luton enough times over the years on that pitch, on their day, bank holiday. I don't know whether they're tier three or not or whatever, but if we were to draw against Wickham, lose at Luton, and then what's the next game, guys? Is it Brentford?
Brentford away.
What's the New Year's date?
On the 7th.
Brentford away. So we go home, away, away, home, away, away, right? You know, so let's say we got 1 point out of the next 9 available. Then you've got the Portsmouth game. Now, by that time, right, we're going to be well entrenched in mid-table. Does the panel think that given that we would then not do anything in the transfer market by thinking that, okay, we have got those players coming back, as opposed to if over the last 3 games we picked up 6 points and over the next 3 games we picked up another 5, yeah, let's say 5 or 6, yeah, would there have been a different attitude going into the transfer market? Because, you know, we still don't know 100% that these players are going to be coming back. But if we carry on the bad run, and it is a bad run, I think it's 2 wins in 7. If we carry on the bad run, it's not going to be worth trying to make a strike for promotion.
And the other thing, of course, with
part of the squad at the moment, do you need to do a
strike that fends off possible scrapping at the bottom for relegation? And by the way, we've just done some quick numbers. Our team last night, this depleted, terrible side, cost us £24.5 million to assemble. Right, and I'm not counting the bench.
It wasn't a weak side, Ian, was it last night? It wasn't our first choice team, but it wasn't weak either.
We should have been better than we were. Yeah. And I get a bit, you know, I mean, if you're going to, if Steve Lansdowne wants to say, right, okay, we're not playing in the transfer market. I think that what we would do is get loans. What would tempt fate is if somebody comes in and says, look, I know he's out of contract in June. Here's £1 million for Zizou. And to see whether the club back.
We would.
Well, I think you'd only take it if you could replace him. And the only way you'd replace him is with a loan. And we've been linked with a couple of lower division strikers, but that's not normally gone well for us, let's be honest. Or bringing somebody down from Scotland.
Yeah.
I think it is, for me, It depends between last night and the start of Feb. There's 24 points to play for. Now, when are those players coming back? Are they coming back in early January, or are they coming back round about the 30th of January? Because if it's the 30th of January, that's another 24 points gone.
Yeah.
And you know, and by that time, if it goes the way that other places have gone, I mean, Luton is in tier 3, by the way. If it goes the way other places have gone, with the tier in London, for example, Bristol could be back in tier three and nobody's down there again. So, you know, there's all kinds of things that could happen, but we need to be better than we are with what we've got.
Yeah, it is a numbers game because, look, you've just said, Ian, there's 8 points to play, 8 games, 24 points to play for between now and the end of the season, right? Now, assuming none of the players come back, but we can bring back Casey Palmer. Let's say we average 1.5 points a game over that. That's 12 points, right? That puts us on 42 with 18 games to go, right? 18 mm-hmm. games to go. So we would have to get about 1.8 points a game, if my memory serves me correctly. 1.8 times 18, that would put us on 1.8 would give us 74. Would give us 74.
76 points it'll give you, David. It's nearly 1.9. So you're looking at 2 points a game. So we ain't going to do.
Yeah, we're getting 1.5 at the moment, aren't we?
So that's the harsh reality.
We got a lot of those, like the goals. We got a lot of the points in the first 5 games.
Yeah. But do you think, you know, is that the best we can hope for? You know, is 12 points up to the end of, that's getting 1.5 points a game. That's more than we've averaged by some distance compared to the last 7 games, yeah? Because that's, you've often said that to me in the past, Ian. What's going to change? Yeah. You know, what is going to change? What's going to, you know, you could get three of those points against Wickham. Yeah. And you.
Well, what you could get, Dave, is,
let's say you beat Wickham and Luton. You're back in the mix again, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, there's Dave, you've got the three things that could change. Number one, injured players come back. Yeah. Number two, we signed some decent lads, probably on loan from Premier Division clubs.
Yeah.
And you could get and this is very unlikely, you could get a change of head coach. And
that's not going to happen.
A better tune out of the players that you've got. But like I say, number three is very doubtful. The other two are to some extent within our control, but only to some extent, because all those injured players could have another relapse.
I know this is going to sound a stupid comment, but I think, you know, In the past, I think, you know, certainly as we've built up to the, you know, this congested fixture, we've kind of said we need to just play the kids in the FA Cup and you know, and take the hit and go out in the third round. I actually think we need to progress in the third round of the FA Cup. I think, you know, there's financial reasons for doing that, but there's also,
keeps a bit of interest going.
It does keep some interest going. But it also, you know, if we are still trying to embed players and get players back from injury, again, it's only a minor point, but that's one less league fixture you pay in January.
Yeah.
Because you don't play Huddersfield on the 23rd. And I know that might sound a minor thing, but if you're on a bad run or whatever and you can just scrape a win in a cup against Portsmouth, you get yourself a break. And you actually, between Norwich and Derby, with that cup game sandwiched in between, you've actually got, you know, 10 days without a league game. And we might need to take every little advantage we can. And because, you know, it's fine margins out there, isn't it? But it is little things like that could work in our favour.
And then, of course,
between Williams being back for Huddersfield and then perhaps having another week's training and being back for Derby, you know, that's the kind of little advantages I think we need to look at.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only chance you're going to get.
Guys, this turned out to be quite a long one. Mark, you wanted to just to wrap up, just to conclude. Yeah, just to conclude, you're right, get them on grass in a competitive game against Portsmouth if they are anywhere fit. I think that's still maybe 10 days too early because I think it's going to be the end of Jan. Mark, you wanted to pay, that's the right word, homage to what happened 3 years ago. Round about now, 3 years ago this week, actually, to be precise, wasn't it? The infamous game against call on the Boxing Day. Yeah, and it was looking so great. But, Mark, why did you want to bring up the Man United game? It's just depressing one to think about that.
Well, it was
going somewhere then.
It was, your finger was just, the sound was just dropping off then, David. Because it's 3 years ago tomorrow, and I looked at the goals again this morning, and it just showed how you can play through the thirds of the pitch. And the second goal, to watch Corey Smith score, and what a great move that was for a player that I can't remember him scoring one league goal for Bristol City, and he only scored about three or four goals in his whole career at Ashton Gate. But the way that we moved those balls through the thirds, I mean, the first one with Brian juggled the ball,
yeah,
and then played it to Pack, and then took a return pass. Wouldn't it be great to see our fullbacks actually, you know, run through on goal and strike the ball like that? And the reverse pass by Taylor.
That was our left winger that scored, Mark.
Yeah, well, the reverse pass for by Matt Taylor
for Smith to get,
you know, playing against a high line defence. It just shows you what players can be capable of if they, you know, they show a bit of confidence. But the fact that it was 3 years ago,
and how we could have done with a player, like Matt Taylor, yeah. Just imagine Matt Taylor then. He'd make a difference.
Wait a minute. That's like if your auntie had, you know, what should be your uncle. Don't make a blind bit of difference, does it? I mean, who's gonna make the Corey Smith run out of our midfield players? Possibly O'Dowda.
Yeah, he nearly scored with a header last night.
Not very often. who's gonna play the little pass that Matt Taylor played? None of them.
Yeah.
Because they can't pass it. They can't play that pass. So, you know, those players, Josh Brownhill, Marlon Pack, Joe Bryan, they're all playing, you know, two of them are playing the Premier League now, and that's what happens. When you're not successful, you have to sell your best players every year. And everybody said, oh, you know, poor old Lee Johnson, you've got to remember, Ian, he had to sell his best players. Yes, if you're unsuccessful, and unsuccessful means not getting promoted, you have to sell your best players.
Ian, he should have sold those players, Ian, in that January. But I'm pretty sure it was, look, we're on the crest of a wave here. If I have to get rid of perhaps one of Flint, Brian or Reed, then promotion's gone. Because actually money was quite tight then. And
we held off until the summer, didn't we? Yeah, but we've only made money in one season out of about the last 10. Right?
It's interesting you say about getting rid of those players, because that goes right the way back to 1976 when it was rumoured in the run-up to promotion that year that Merrick and Richie, one or both of them, were wanted by Arsenal for
£250,000. They made a derisory offer, didn't they? I think about £250,000 for both of them, didn't they? And then we said no, and we stuck with it then.
But look, it's...
We asked the fans to purchase tickets in advance.
That's it. It was a bit like these days, isn't it? Dave, final word from you on the Man United game. And that was the pivotal moment, really, because whichever way you cut it, Man United was the height of enjoyment subsequent to the Crystal Palace win. Yeah, it all came to a crescendo there that night at Ashton Gate 3 years ago. And it's been... It's been a decline, hasn't it? Yeah, ever since. Yeah, we've not delivered from that point, despite spending money on paper, better players. But we come back to this hard luck on injuries. Your thoughts, Dave, just to wrap up this episode of the podcast.
Yeah, I guess Man United for me was that kind of peak moment, wasn't it? You know, I think the whole kind of day, I remember finishing my contract the day before. So I had the whole day, and I kind of went down to Ashton in the morning or late morning, met up with an old mate from work and his two kids, and we sat in whatever is it, Gourmet Burger, or was it GBK, whatever the place is called, on North Street. We had a burger together, we went kind of had a couple of drinks, then we went and watched the football. And I just remember when Joe Bryan scored that goal, I don't think I actually cheered. I think I was kind of like shocked.
Yeah.
I just stood there and looked at Joe and thought, bloody hell, we've just gone 1-0 against Man United. You know, and all of a sudden there's this belief that we can win, even when Ibrahimovic got an equaliser, you know,
Ibrahimovic was like,
well, we've got ahead once, we could do this again. And you know, the goal in injury time.
And we did.
It was just a dying minute. I wouldn't say it's been downhill for that, but and I don't want to make it sound like this is a Lee Johnson bashing either, because it's not. But I think the way we recruited through O'Driscoll and Cotterill, and what we've gradually seen is those players, a lot of them have gone on to
do decent things, as Ian and Mark have just said. We haven't actually replaced them with.
That is a very good point. That is a very good point. Yeah. So you look at the player, and I know we've had the success of Adam Webster and a few others that have been sold on, but all the players, that came in that period, or say a decent number, you're right, they have gone on. Guys, this is our last podcast pre-Christmas. We'll be coming back on December the 30th. We're doing a live lunchtimey one, a bit like this. We'll be two games further on, one game off the halfway point in the season. I'd like to thank you for your contribution all through, because it's been good to have that natter that we don't get now, that we would have had with our friends at match days. Mike, who was listening, you're not who I thought you were. Yeah, we do need to be a bit more positive, but it's when you listen to moments like the Man United situation that you you do remember the past. If I can just have a Christmas thought from each of you in turn, starting with you, Mark, what would you like to say? It doesn't have to be about football, but what would you like to say?
I'd just say to all our listeners and all City fans, just stay positive. Hopefully that the coaches can instill confidence in the players. I mean, go out on the pitch and make the fans proud. And let's all stay safe, you and your families, and have a very happy Christmas and a much better 2021, because we all deserve it. And hopefully that vaccine will seep through the population and fans will return in 2021 to 22. And best to you all.
Great. Ian?
Well, I've just got the latest news. It's breaking news from Ashton Gate. The club are now, in order to raise funds, the club are now selling a manager package. you pay £1,000. You pick the starting 11. You sit in the home dugout and occasionally wander around the technical area looking at the floor.
Is there a dance off?
Cappuccinos.
That's great. That's good.
And you keep saying, as I say, when you haven't said, and it's about us levels. I wish everybody a very Merry Christmas. I hope 2021 is a darn sight better than 2020. Please God.
Yeah.
And I hope everybody stays safe, healthy, well, don't lose any loved ones. And for God's sake, don't act like an idiot over Christmas in this 5-day Boris Johnson numpty free for all. And I know some people will, and they are already. Yeah. But please don't, because, you know, how are you going to feel if you kill your gran or infect a lot of other people? So please don't do it. There's good chaps. And chappieses, and God bless you all.
And finally, chappieses
brilliantly.
And theys. You can't say chappieses. You can say theys as well. Dave's put his lottery numbers up, which I'm not going to repeat. I don't know whether I'll do them. And then if I don't do them and they win, I'll be bitter. But if I do them and everybody who's still in the studio does it, I'll have to split it with 21 other people. But there we go.
Is Dave going to say next year we'll be millionaires? Because I just love him to say that.
Yeah. No, Dave, your final thought before we.
I got to say, I think the two other guys summed it up much better than me. I think my message is not a Christmas message. It's about players, not formations.
Yeah, good show. Guys, thanks for everything. It's been a pleasure, as it always is. Thanks to those who've listened. I think we'll be going through the 10,000 downloads over the New Year period. So thanks for that. And look at that, got the old sound effects coming out there.
I thought that was your posse, David.
Yeah. My posse. Yeah. All right. Catch you later, guys.
Good afternoon, boys.
Have a great Christmas.
Cheers. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
God bless you all. Merry Christmas. And Happy New Year.
Take care.